Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, we often talk about disruption in tech, but today we're diving into something much more foundational. We're looking at the professional relationship itself. We've got a stack of sources here that all point to how the very architecture of business, how suppliers and clients really interact, is fundamentally changing. It's moving away from the simple transaction and toward a true partnership model. Our mission today is to sort of give you a shortcut to understanding this whole shift. We're going to unpack the core thesis from the material you shared, which really centers on two big ideas: the rise of buyer-centric alliances and, well, the radical rethinking of professional helpfulness that they demand. And this isn't just about better customer service. It's something much deeper.
It is. And if you had to boil this entire deep dive down to just one sentence, it would be this: professional alliances redefine helpfulness in buyer-centric deals. That's the entire universe we're exploring today. The key insight is that helpfulness is no longer just a soft skill or a nice gesture. It's a formalized institutional mandate that's baked right into the structure of the relationship.
That is the perfect starting point. It forces us to define these two pillars right away. So let's start with the structure. What exactly makes a business relationship a buyer-centric alliance? And why is that word alliance so important?
Let's break that down. First, the alliance. We're talking about a structure that, you know, deliberately moves beyond that old supplier-client dynamic. It implies a formal partnership, a collaborative structure, often with multiple parties, designed for long-term integration. We're not talking about just fulfilling a short-term contract here. It's an integrated team, not a collection of vendors. Now you add buyer-centric, and this is where the philosophical revolution really happens. Historically, success was always measured internally, right? Did the supplier deliver the product? Was the contract fulfilled? That's all supplier-centric. A buyer-centric alliance just completely flips that accountability. The success of the entire structure is measured only by the buyer's outcomes in their own market.
Okay, so let me see if I've got this. If I'm a technology vendor in one of these alliances, and my job is to deliver, say, a new AI system, my success isn't just logging that the system is installed. My success is only realized when the buyer actually achieves, I don't know, a 15% reduction in their operational costs because of that system.
Precisely. And that's the critical detail that moves this from theory to, you know, hard business reality. The measure of value is externalized to the buyer's world. It's not about inputs. It's all about outputs. And this means, structurally, the alliance has to share the buyer's risk.
Right. That's where the rubber meets the road. Because if the alliance is staking its own financial success on the buyer's goals, which, I mean, involves things they can't fully control, like market shifts, how does that shared risk actually show up in the contract? What does that look like in practice?
Well, that's where you see the biggest shift in the technical details. Instead of simple fixed price contracts based on delivery, these buyer-centric alliances are using value-based or outcome-based contracts. This might mean a big chunk of the alliance's fee, say 20 or 30%, is held back. And it's only paid out when specific pre-agreed KPIs are met by the buyer, maybe 6, 12, even 24 months down the line.
So the incentive is hardwired into the deal. The alliance doesn't get fully paid unless the buyer actually wins.
Exactly. Or, you know, on the flip side, you see penalty clauses, clawbacks, and they're tied not to a service failure, but to an outcome failure. If the buyer doesn't increase their market share, the alliance might face financial penalties no matter how well they did their individual jobs, because the whole reason for its existence wasn't met. It forces this really deep, almost intrusive level of partnership.
And that intrusive partnership brings us to the second pillar here, how this all redefines professional helpfulness. Because if my pay is tied to your strategic outcome, just being responsive to your request is, well, it's not even close to enough anymore.
It fundamentally changes the DNA of what service is. The helpful professional in the old model was reactive. They were efficient. They executed instructions. The new helpful professional, the one in a buyer-centric alliance, has to be strategic and proactive. Helpfulness becomes strategic involvement. It's about removing any obstacle to the buyer's success, even obstacles that are outside the immediate contract. And here's the fascinating and sometimes uncomfortable part. It means professionals have to proactively challenge the buyer, to challenge their initial assumptions, maybe even the solution they originally asked for.
Okay, let's get specific on that. Can you give us an example of a professional being helpful by challenging the buyer? Because that sounds like a great way to lose a client if you're not careful.
It absolutely carries risk, but that's the new definition of professional courage. So imagine a company hires an alliance, a software firm, a logistics consultant, a legal team to build a new supply chain system. The buyer insists that the contract must say all supplier data has to be stored locally for security. Now, the traditionally helpful lawyer would just rubber stamp that clause, but the new buyer-centric professional, knowing the real outcome is about rapid global expansion, steps in. They say, look, that clause, while it hits your internal security metric, makes it impossible to integrate the cloud-based AI we need. Your security man undermines your scalability goal. True help means we find a different security model that actually supports the outcome you want.
Wow. That is a huge distinction. It means the legal team has to understand the logistics strategy and the tech side of things. It breaks down silos not just within the alliance, but within the buyer's own company.
Exactly. The alliance demands synthetic thinkers, not just specialists. Your professional legitimacy now depends on your strategic contribution to the whole outcome, not just your technical skill in a vacuum. The professional has to ask, does my expertise, delivered exactly as they asked, actually help them win? And if the answer is no, I have an obligation to speak up.
So for you listening, if you're engaging with professional services, this means you shouldn't just expect your partners to listen. You should actually expect them to push back, as long as it's grounded in your ultimate objectives. The relationship changes from vendor to, I don't know, an intellectual sparring partner.
And that expectation flows right back to the risk profile. When the alliance takes on that outcome risk, they are mandated to make sure the buyer avoids, well, self-sabotage.
Okay, let's pivot to the mechanism. The source material is clear that this is all delivered through professional alliances. Why is the alliance structure the necessary vehicle for this? Why can't a single, really skilled consulting firm just do this on its own?
I'd suggest it has to come down to complexity. I mean, achieving these deep outcome-focused goals almost always requires an integrated effort. If the buyer's goal is launch a new digital marketplace in Asia, you're going to need a regulatory expert, a tech team, a market research firm. A single company just rarely has all of that expertise under one roof. And even if they do, it's often siloed.
The complexity is the key constraint. Yeah.
Sure.
This redefined helpfulness is just too comprehensive for any single entity to provide. If the problem is multifaceted tech, legal, cultural change, then the solution has to be multifaceted too. So the alliance structure, it doesn't just pool resources. It creates a governance framework. It forces all these different specialists to work toward a single, shared KPI, the buyer's outcome. The alliance itself is the mechanism that institutionalizes that commitment. I have to imagine this creates enormous friction. I mean, internally, both within the alliance and within the buyer's own organization. It's easy to say, let's share risk. But what about the reality of coordinating compensation and culture across three different firms?
That is the single greatest operational challenge, and it's a huge focus in the sources. For the alliance partners, it means their sales and service teams have to accept being paid on external outcomes, not internal targets. That is a massive cultural hurdle for any sales organization. And for the buyer, they have to be ready to break down their own silos too. The alliance can't succeed if the buyer's IT department is measured on uptime, but their strategy department is measured on innovation speed. The alliance holds up a mirror to the buyer's own internal misalignments.
So the alliance is like a unified operating system, but it's also a synchronization device. It forces everyone, the sellers and the buyer's own people, to align on one destination, or the whole thing fails. It's an incredibly high-stakes environment.
It elevates the entire conversation. You're moving from feature lists and pricing to strategic destiny. The alliance is the organizational proof that the buyer-centric label is actually real because it's structured itself to absorb the buyer's problem. You just can't deliver integrated solutions with siloed vendors.
Okay, let's synthesize this. We started with the idea that professional alliances redefine helpfulness. We've established that this redefinition is driven by a focus on buyer-centric outcomes defined by shared risk and external KPIs. And we've seen that the alliance itself is the necessary mechanism to deliver that comprehensive, integrated, and frankly challenging helpfulness that's required.
That's a perfect summary. This shift is truly structural. It moves professional relationships from being measured by the quantity of services delivered to being measured by the quality of the results achieved. It demands a new skill set, a new contract model, and a new level of trust between everyone involved.
This is just game-changing insight into the future of partnerships, whether you're the buyer or one of the professionals in that alliance. Thank you for walking us through this.
Thank you. This is a framework that I think is going to dominate strategic deals for the next decade.
And thank you, the listener, for joining us on the deep dive. We hope this has given you a head start on understanding the massive implications of this realignment.
And as you move forward, here's a final provocative thought to consider. Building on this material, if helpfulness is now defined by the alliance structure and measured by these complex buyer outcomes, How do individual professionals inside that collective, the top lawyer, the best coder, how do they maintain their unique specialized value when that value is completely subsumed by the group's shared success? What new skills, like, say, strategic synthesis or cross-organizational influence, are now required to be considered truly professional in this new world? Go explore that.
We'll get in next time for the next deep dive.